Good evening. You're either watching or listening to Redwood Wonk. I'm with David Frank. My name is Eric Kirk. We are talking national political news of the day, and there is so much going on. It's hard to even know what to cover, but we're going to talk about the big news for California is these huge fires that have erupted because of drought conditions. I mean, there's been less than an inch of rain anywhere in the Los Angeles area since last March. Some areas have had zero rain. It's really bad. And then you have the Santa Ana winds, 60 to 80 miles per hour, a few gusts of 100 miles per hour. You got a fire tornado that made it on film. I mean, it's just everything is ridiculous. And there have been thousands, I guess, homes have been burned in Pacific Palisades and San Fernando Valley. And these fires are really hard to put out. And this should be a unifying moment, right, across the country, but it's not. We are in crazy land these days, and basically the Republicans, this is not the first time they've done this, by the way. They are very hesitant to vote for aid to blue states. I mean, it's just they just don't want to do it. DeSantis, back, I forget which hurricane it was that hit New Jersey and New York, he voted against it, Governor DeSantis of Florida, and Republicans, it did pass, but there were Republicans who were saying we shouldn't be wasting money on the blue states, never mind that the blue states are like the primary source of money, but revenue, but the but so and every reason the Republicans seem to want to blame these fires on everything except climate change. I mean, just everything, from lesbians in the fire department to water fish protections. And, you know, there may be some aspects of it that are true, but then they're saying, oh, you're not allowed to log. Well, there's no logging in Los Angeles. It was a desert. We built homes on a desert, desert with water supply issues. There was a movie about it back in the 1980s called Chinatown. Look it up. Water has always been a problem there. There are three major rivers that go through Los Angeles or the area, and they don't even run all year long all the time. You don't have access to the water from the Sierras doesn't make it there. And you've got some mountains with some snow during some parts of the year, but there just isn't a lot of water there. So, you know, but the reservoir was dry and a lot of questions have to be made about that. But then they started getting even more ridiculous. In one of his social media posts, Trump said, oh, there were four dams removed, which I was trying to figure out, dams? Were there dams in those rivers? No, he was referring to the Klamath River dams, one of which is in Oregon. They're all 800 miles away from Los Angeles. They want to blame it on other things, mismanagement. And as of today, Jim Jordan is calling for Trump to move the 2028 Olympics from Los Angeles to another city. I tried to research. I can't even be clear if he has that option. The Olympic Committee, you know, takes applications from people years ahead of time, and they choose the city. I'm not sure that Trump can make that decision at this point. I don't know. I haven't seen anything to contradict it, but apparently the chair of the Olympic Committee is just not even taking Trump's phone calls at the moment. He just says it's inappropriate. But the politics are bizarre, there's plenty of politics where you could say a pox on both houses, right? Democrats do it too. But in fact, the Democrats do not hedge on aid to Florida or South Carolina or any of that. They just don't. They don't talk about bad policies down there. They don't talk, wherever it's hit. They just vote for the money because that's what you do when there is a major crisis and the country has to come together. I've got plenty more to say on this, but Dave, I'm going to hand it to you. Fires are mostly under control, but they're worried that the winds are going to heat up again. Is it Governor Newsom's fault?
Well, thank you for that setup, as always. It's Mother Nature's fault. That's the way of the world. Disasters happen. We don't, you know, we live in the North Coast region in Northern California. When earthquakes happen, there's really nothing that you could point to blame people for political expediency and opportunism, which is a lot of what is surrounding.
We'll see when it does happen. We'll see if that's true.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately there's been a recognition of the impact of climate change by people that choose to be informed about that. And that includes a consensus amongst the insurance industry. So it's a separate a thread of this larger story, but just last month, there was an agreement reached to try to keep some of these larger insurers in California, because they were saying, look, because of climate change, we can't charge, and the current law, we can't charge enough for the extreme risk of catastrophic fire events. Yeah. And so we don't want to be in California anymore. And so it's a different story, but the idea is that they found a way to negotiate higher rates just in December. And so anyway, point is that that seems to almost happen in a vacuum when you watch the political coverage in mainstream media. So it's one of those things. I think you hit the nail on the head. You framed it. You tongue in cheek said, is it Gavin Newsom's fault? I think it's pretty wild, actually, how much blame is going around for staffing policies at the LA fire department, when in fact there's almost nothing substantive at all about this particular, the impact of their hiring and promotion practices. That's, maybe people who disagree with all DEI and all non-merit, they'll call it non-merit hiring and promoting, they have their own agenda, but to lay that agenda over top of a natural disaster, it's not going to age well. It's really ugly and ignorant, and I think most people realize that. Yet not the president and MAGA folks and Republicans in the House, who really enjoy the elevation of the trolling narrative into the public space. So, for example, Speaker Johnson said, and other legislators, both in the House and the Senate, said maybe aid for this tragedy should be contingent on modifications to California policy. I'm going to agree with you that you don't typically hear Democrats speak like that about disasters, no matter where they occur. And truthfully, you probably didn't used to hear Republicans talk like that either.
That's right. No, yeah. This is a new thing.
So I think you were talking about Superstorm Sandy that hit the Northeast U.S., where governor of New Jersey, he ended up taking a little bit for walking side by side with President Obama at the time. Yeah, Chris Christie and Obama did a photo op together where they said, there's no politics here. Like, people need relief. And that's the reality, ultimately. We could talk a little bit more about the specifics. Like obviously, if you're critical of political leaders who you disagree with, so for example, Karen Bass, right? She's on a trip. Maybe you don't agree with the trip. She doesn't respond to media when she's in transit on the way back because she probably doesn't know what to say. You can criticize her for that. There was a decision made not to provide resources to the fire department at the same level that resources were given to, say, the police department. Yeah. Maybe you disagree with that. So there's space for policy differences and a reflection on how to make things better in the future. I think people realize now that robust funding resources for fire in areas like this are important. I'll say one last thing and then I'll hand it back to you. Sure. I did hear the spokesperson for the LA Fire Department and also a different Cal Fire expert, I think, both independently were saying that we all know about Santa Ana winds. We know that this is a natural event that happens, and it's an extreme fire risk that comes from that anyway. But then the question is, what may have caused it in this instance and what may be done in the future to prevent things like this from happening again, I think that's the more robust conversation we need to have.
Well, the problem is we've had freakishly dystopian lack of rain. I mean, I think maybe 1 year it's happened before where areas had zero rain from March to January. I mean, and that's just, you know, that's just ridiculous. And that is not naturally occurring, or at least wasn't naturally occurring, you know, 50 years ago. Yeah, if you want to question policies, question whether or not these developments in the area should have been allowed in the first place, building all this on a desert without adequate water supply. I mean, you should have to account for water before you start building houses. And that was not the case. They just kept building, and they didn't allow for a lot of reservoirs. Because, well, no, that takes space from houses and walls. I mean, you know, you can talk about how that was just absolutely ridiculous. And that, you know, of course, housing, we need more housing. This is going to hurt housing, even if it's rich people. I mean, James Woods lost his mansion, for instance. He was on television. But these are long-term policies that we need to discuss. Whether there were controlled burns would have made a difference in this, I don't know. I don't know the layout, but it's grassland. The only trees you find down there are eucalyptus, which are invasive species, and some pine trees, some cypress, if you're close enough to the water, some oak trees, wild oak trees, and the rest. But it's not like you've got forests, you know, they say we need to do more logging. There's no logging there. There's no timber that's available there. Certainly no coniferous, cedars that's worth money. Definitely no redwoods. So it's just, or even Douglas fir, there's very little of that kind of stuff down there. But it's like everybody's got their pet issues. The controlled burns, maybe there need to be more of them, but in that area, I don't know. I'm not an expert. Unlike certain politicians, I'm not an expert on things I know nothing about. But it's also very possible that they didn't have as many controlled burns this year because it was so dry. You a lot of times they do them after the first rain. You get some dampness and can't do it. So here I am defending the policies, right? And the absolute blaming, or there is a right-wing reaction to the tearing down of the Klamath dams. And for the first time in over 100 years, we've got salmon going way up that river. It was a major victory for environmentalism and also the fishing industry, particularly for the Yurok tribe. So it's just, and to politicize that even anyway, when that's like, 700 miles away, I think, is the Oregon border. You know, it's just, it's ridiculous. And of course, they're saying, well, we need to turn on the spigot and bring all that Northern California water down. Maybe you just don't build so much, on top of it. If you don't have the water to do it, that's what happens, why you see a kind of a rural area the Devil's Slide to Half Moon Bay and all the way down to Santa Cruz. They wanted to do more developments there, but a couple things happened. First of all, there's farmland protection. It's really rich soil there. And secondly, they said you have to provide water if you're going to build. So they can't develop anymore unless they can come up with, the developers themselves can come up with a source of water. It makes sense. Same thing in Fort Bragg. No new business can go in until another one closes that uses water. It just absolutely makes sense. I'm going on and on here, but it's the fact that certain Republicans, and some more than others, have tried to exploit this as a way to attack California and what you call team building politics. It's just obscene. It's obscene that they've done this and that they are trivializing people's losses over stupid S partisanship. And it's sad.
Yeah, I think I know we just have a couple minutes left on this topic, but one of the things I think is important to point out We hear about the importance of having enough water in the rivers to sustain a healthy ecosystem. That becomes the butt of a joke when those ecosystems are protected. And I think that's a little unfair. A lot of Republicans that I know are actually conservationists who are hunters and they fish and they understand that too. So there's the media environment. There's the political trench warfare that's happening, which there's no bar too low for people when it comes to slinging mud. But also, you know, there are legitimate criticisms too. Like people had said, hey, it's really hard to build things in California or specifically in LA because of permitting and licensing and bureaucracy. I've heard that from both sides of the aisle. Well, it turns out that there was a reservoir that was not in place, supposedly not in place, that could have provided some more water. That's not the same thing as being a solution or a fault. It's just it's a parallel data point that people will bring in. Maybe they should have fixed the lining to this reservoir quicker. Maybe that would have helped this community have a little bit more water. That's not the same thing as the just general disconnect between what a fire department is really built and designed to do and what a water system can do. So, for example, I heard that a lot of pumps had to be shut off when the power got shut off because of the fire risk that couldn't move water around the system. Also, the system isn't designed to draw on putting out five simultaneous fires, each with thousands of homes being burned, right? So it's overall, from a system analysis perspective, it's a lot easier to blame any one thing that is in alignment with your agenda than to say overall this was a catastrophe, it's a tragedy, and we really need to acknowledge the loss and come together for a vision of how to prevent this in the future.
All right, well, we're gonna have to move on from that, but you know, it's it'll probably come up again because they have no shame. That's the theme. I'm sorry, it's just absolutely ridiculous, but we're moving on to the next topic. Okay, Pete Hegseth, Fox News figure, has been nominated for the Secretary of Defense position. We've talked about him before. He's got allegations of sexual assault against him dating back to 2018, and he has, he's got some other issues. His own mother called him an abuser of women. She took it back later and went on, media tour to talk people out of believing what she said way back when. And he's had several divorces, and there are a lot of problems with it's the type of thing that used to be disqualifying. Times have changed. I mean, arguably we've got a sexual predator who's about to be president again. Arguably we have at least two sexual predators on the Supreme Court. We do this. We don't believe victims when people in power are the ones who are accused. We just don't, as a society. I mean, some of us do, but So we have these hearings, and they became hot and heavy. There's probably other things that are more directly relevant to the position that makes him problematic, including his extreme ideologies. He is a self-identified Christian nationalist. And along with Huckabee, he supports pressing Israel to build the third temple so that it could, be a usher in the final days, as if, according to the Christian faith, humans are supposed to be able to do that. But it does say in prophecy, it references a rebuilding of a temple. This generation shall not pass. But that is in their agenda. I think the problem they're going to run into is, for the most part, Judaism just doesn't have that format to incorporate a temple anymore, except maybe a few small sects who do do take interest in that. So you've got this, you've got other issues that Mr. Hegseth has done, but it does look like he's going to be, it was looking bad for him in the fall, but it does look like he has the votes to pass it. The Republicans rounded the wagons for him. Democrats went after him tooth and nail. But it does look like he's going to pass and get the votes. And is that good news for the country or not? Depends on your perspective, I guess. There are some people who are on the left who say, hey, he's probably not going to be very effective. Maybe it's better that he be in that position so that the Trump's policies don't get implemented as quickly and as effectively. Yeah, there's a lot of talk about that. But it's a big hearing. This was a big clash. They're saying that all these allegations against him are created by the liberal media. Dave, what's your take on Pete Hegseth?
So we, like you said, we've talked about it before. There are some alarming elements of his worldview, but that's not what we're here to talk about today. Mostly, we're talking about the actual hearings and the sort of implications of those hearings. So I think the big headline takeaway is that he didn't do anything terrible during the hearings. Nothing terrible occurred where there was a disqualifying event. So from a GOP senator's perspective, so basically, I think he will maintain the support of the GOP block of senators, meaning he has done enough to get confirmed. So I think that's the headline, really, ultimately, that will be the important part is that, you know, he's a known entity, a known quantity. Nothing much changed during these hearings, other than an airing of grievances slash a robust defense of his flaws. So we can talk about that. And I think...
Do you think that he's going to get any Democratic votes?
I can't imagine how. I mean, just doesn't.
Yeah, this is going to be a strict party line one, probably.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, like the character flaws, which is where I was going to start from... you could say, hey, accused of the things, right? The laundry list, sexual assault, sexual harassment, intoxication at work functions, immoral behavior, infidelity to marriage. These are all things that that are you know, contemptible from the perspective of trying to get somebody through a hearing. But the Republicans found ways to humanize him and defend him. We could talk more about who said what. But professionally, I think that's the bigger piece here. Bottom line, he's got no meaningful experience with or knowledge of the role. Some of the senators pointed that out. You know, when it comes to policy, strategy, logistics, management, it's the largest organization, right? It's like it's really one of the hardest things to manage in the whole on the whole planet, and he's just, you know, flat out, bottom line, completely unqualified. So there's that.
Although I think they could put a good team underneath him that manages, does the actual managing. Usually the heads are kind of the spokespersons anyway. It's not like he's doing it. But yeah, we should talk a little bit about how the hearings are going, how the hearings went through it. And it was very contentious.
So let's go, like, dive in. So the Democrats, I think Tim Kaine got a lot of headlines for moralizing about the immoral behavior. That was mostly grandstanding, I think. And Kristen Gillibrand, she was making some substantive arguments about how, hey, Mr. Hegseth, the statements you're making about changing the standards for women in the military for combat roles are not true. The fact that there are quotas is not true. I think I saw somebody who looked into it, and they were basically saying, generally speaking, it's harder for the military to recruit, period, because we're all, you know, more out of shape than ever before. We're all less qualified than ever before. So the military, generally speaking, has lowered physical fitness standards for general enlistment. But when it comes to, like, say, special forces, those are the most trained, those standards are not changing. So the military needs, she was making the case, military needs motivated, well-trained people, all the soldiers they can get. Women are serving in combat duty now and doing a great job. And despite what, Hengstgruf has said publicly. So she made that point. And when she said, give me one example of one thing that is a fact, like what has changed when you talk, like he was grandstanding, he was saying this has changed and the standards are lowered and all. And she said, name one thing. He didn't name one thing. So it's just about the narrative. It's about the party building. And finally, I'll say Tammy Duckworth, she hammered home about the lack of qualifications. She's like, do you have any experience with international security arrangements and agreements? No. Can you name one type of international security agreement? No. Okay. So there was that piece of it. And I'll just say this, and then I'll let you kind of talk about the principles here. I gave you three Democrats, here's three Republicans. Tom Cotton, he just basically said, hey, you're a Christian, I'm a Christian. You're a Zionist, I'm a Zionist. What's wrong with being a Christian Zionist, right? Right. So trying to normalize the fact that he went to Israel and called for the destruction of the one of the most high holy places in the Muslim religion and replacing it with a new temple. Like, I think his exact, not that he called for it, he said Zionism is a miracle. Israel is a miracle. That temple that's going to be built someday is going to be a miracle too. So it was a little bit loosey-goosey. Marquine Mullen, he tempered the character flaws. He's a senator. And he just said, hey, how many times have senators come in here into the chambers and voted drunk at night? Probably happens all the time. So you guys are all hypocrites. And he said, how many of you in here are totally not cheating on your wife or not leaving your wife or your mistress? So that happens all the time. So that kind of tempered that. And Tim Sheehy from Montana, I think the example was I don't even want to denigrate his comments, but just to say he asked how many push-ups he could do and he asked how many genders there are. So he's speaking to the base. He's like, what do people want to hear Pete say? Yeah. People want to hear how many push-ups he can do. So it's a tale of two cities in the chamber.
I mean, I actually agree that that marital infidelity, I mean, it's a bad thing, but I don't know that that's an appropriate discussion for something for this type of hearing, nor having been drunk on the job. I don't think it's a big deal. I think the Democrats are okay, fine to bring it up, but they shouldn't make a big deal about it. The drugging the woman and taking her phone away and sexually assault her, that's a much more serious thing. And they point out, well, the district attorney didn't press charges. That's because it's really hard to prove something happened when the woman barely remembers what happened. But all she does remembers is saying no, 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 and it happened. And it's problematic because you want to protect somebody's rights to be able to defend himself. On the other hand, it's very concerning if somebody who did this and uses their power to accomplish this and get away with it, that he's going to be, of all things, Secretary of Defense. I mean, that is a disqualifying aspect of it. The other principles, though, yeah, having no experience other than, okay, he served twice in the military, graduate of Princeton, and apparently did pretty well there. I mean, okay, he's a smart guy. And maybe he'll grow into the position, or maybe he'll have the right staff that can prop him up. I just know that there have to be much better qualified people to have been presented to this. But Trump wants loyalists. That's the main category here. And apparently there aren't that many people in the military who have at least committed to being loyal to him.
Yeah, so you hit the nail on the head. These are the two we're in alignment here. These are the two things I was going to try to make sure we covered before the end of the segment. From the perspective of what was said in the hearings, there was no direct attack necessarily that hit broadside and sunk his candidacy, which right. means that there's this bipartisan sort of consensus behind the scenes at the Department of Defense or within the community of leaders of the military that they probably don't consider him much of a threat as an independent entity, not particularly competent or knowledgeable in this space. And really, they know they're getting Trump. They're getting Trump, basically. And they had Trump before. So in a way, what more does Pete Hegseth add to the problem? It's Trump, his advisors, his, you know, there's going to be, you know, a dozen, somewhere between a dozen and two dozen very, very highly educated and informed people in the space. We may or may not agree with the policies, but they're looking, the Department of Defense is looking at that. They're looking at what, for example, what was in Project 2025 about changing the footprint of the U.S. military and its commitments and its policies. So maybe they're going to have a little bit less, you know, DEI or something like that. These are the kinds of things that they expect to see.
He wants to remove women from combat roles.
Yeah. That's, and even that would be a hard sell, but it wouldn't, DOD leadership isn't thinking this is an existential threat. So, I mean, I don't want to end this early, so to speak, but I just want to agree with what you said, that his primary qualification is the perception and probably reality of loyalty to Trump. And so he's a known, like, you, whatever, Trump's transparent. This person is going to, you know, just probably be the water carrier, basically, for Trump. He appears to have served his country, you know, well as a soldier, and he served his fellow soldiers well in his capacity as an advocate for veterans. He's an accomplished media personality, whether people disagree with him or agree with him. But, you know, based on those opinions that he expressed, I think it's pretty clear he indicated that he is a disruptor who is in alignment with President Trump and President Trump supporters, MAGA Nation, generally speaking. Which, you know, leads me to think that even though we might look at some of the things he said or done and say, I'd question why he would even be there in any universe, it's probably not the end of status quo in when it comes to what would have happened, no matter who's in that role.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that they, you know, have to be concerned about, and maybe they vetted and maybe he's been forthright with them in the vetting process. But if he did that to one woman, it's likely he did it to others. And while it won't necessarily result in him being taken out of office, if more women do eventually come forward, it's going to be headlines that distract from the president's agenda. That's one reason I would probably avoid somebody who's been accused to the point of a police investigation, even though it doesn't seem like it's fair because, you know, you're just going off. But the reason most of us who consider ourselves progressives tend to believe the victims is there's usually more of a detriment to them of lying than anything to gain. So he did with at least one of the women he cheated with pay them off had her sign an NDA. Might be that the victim did, I don't know. There was a lawsuit later in 2020, and I think he did sign an NDA. You know, these are things that they're taking a chance with, but then Trump administration is probably going to have all kinds of distracting stuff about him. So I just don't think they care. It is the agenda. He is going to implement their agenda, Trump's agenda, without question. I'll let you close it out.
I'm going to just double down and say that I think his primary qualification is his loyalty, and that's going to keep the Senate intact. And when it comes to passing, getting him confirmed. On first blush, he appears to be, you know, a distraction and not the pick that the GOP leadership should have supported. But this is the universe we live in.
Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause. The cause of democracy.
We are going to raise issues that, you know, historically have not been raised.
What about the nuclear option, doing away with the filibuster? I can tell you that would be the end of the Senate as it was originally devised.
All of this is possible for America. Who was standing in the way? Mitch McConnell.
Where an insurrection that sought to overturn an election, when that failed, the action moved into state capitals.
Okay, that brings us to the bill that is pending in Congress right now. I believe it's already been passed in the House, and it is getting worked over in the Senate, although some amendments have been made to it that make it even more harsh. So that's going to require a reconciliation meeting between the Senate and the House at some point, but I don't know what's happening with the Democratic Party amendments, but I guess I should explain this is an anti-immigrant bill or an immigration reform bill from the Republican point of view. That the primary aspects of it is that it mandates that the federal government detain people who are illegally here, undocumented, who are accused or convicted and accused of certain violent crimes. And the amendments that were passed today just expanded the list of crimes that this could happen for. In old days, Democrats would have put up a fight, but 20 Democrats are voting with the Republicans on every turn. I think that some of the more centrist Democrats have concluded that the immigration issue is not something to put up a fight on, that it's why we lost the presidency, why we lost, never mind that immigration has been on the decline all year long. The illegal border crossings, but it doesn't matter. They do not want to go down with the ship. John Fetterman was one of the first to jump on that bandwagon, and it's getting very little the opposition from Democrats. And so this makes you wonder whether Democrats are they. There are some amendments being proposed by Democrats exempting DACA people, for instance, and a few other things, families, not separating families. But it sounds like the Republicans aren't even going to allow discussion on those amendments. We'll see, let alone a vote on them. So this is a fairly draconian bill, mandating detention before before even a conviction, unprecedented. Maybe it has not unprecedented, but it certainly hasn't been a part of immigration policy up until now. Looks like it's probably going to pass. But why are the Democrats surrendering so quickly? Do they actually believe that this is happening, or have they just put up the white flag with regard to immigration?
So I think we have to look at this in the context of the expectation of what's about to happen in terms of immigration roundups and a modification to civil liberties and civil rights the expectation that we've had through now, right? We don't know. Trump's policies are unknown to us, and publicly speaking, what's actually going to happen. This bill, they actually put this bill out there back in March, and it passed in the House but didn't pass in the Senate because it doesn't seem on its face to be necessary. But you asked me why Democrats have gone along. It's 48 Democrats in the House and so far voted for it. And for this amendment that just passed, it was 20 Democrats supported that amendment to expand the list of crimes that would trigger a DHS federal involvement in a local or state level law enforcement issue. So those crimes that are in the original bill are theft, burglary, and shoplifting. The crimes that are in the amendment are assault. The crime is assault on a police officer. So I'm not a political leader, so I don't have, there's no, I feel comfortable being critical of something that I wouldn't be critical of if I was a political leader. It just doesn't seem necessary, right? But there's such backlash right now about the sheer number of migrants into the country who are here legitimately. I looked it up the other day, and I think it's like 1.2 million people are here awaiting an asylum hearing. So right. they're in the system. They're in the Homeland Security system. They're undocumented. So they're technically here legally because they registered and said, yes. I get my day in court. Of those people, 620,000 have committed crimes. So, 10%. And if you look at the general population of Americans, it's about 30% of Americans commit crimes. And it's a little bit different with felonies, with more serious crimes. It's about 3%, I think, of the migrants, who are on that list of people. With American population more broadly, it's like 10%, something like that, commit serious crimes. So they are underrepresented, depending how you cut it, by about a third. A natural-born citizen is about three times more likely to commit a small crime or a serious crime. So it's not like they're committing crimes in any significant – I don't want to say it's not a significant number. It's not a disproportionate number. It's not like there are waves of criminals. It's just that it's human nature. People commit crimes. Like three out of 10 people commit crimes, right? So it's just how – it's a thing. But again, why did Democrats go along? Because it's not something you could look in front of a camera and justify and say, you know what, these people who aren't here fully legally yet, let's let them go commit crimes without having consequences. No one's going to say that. So this is the opposite of that. I heard Fetterman speak about his support for the bill, and he just said, I'm not sure what's wrong with Democrats, but if people are involved in, gang-related burglary and theft rings, then that's a disqualifying event for their future asylum-seeking privileges. And so if you frame it so narrowly
But it's already in the law that if you commit a serious crime, you don't get asylum. It's there.
Correct. But it's the political zeitgeist that's happening right now. And I just think they don't want to be on the wrong side of it. They don't want to be seen. That's why I was saying, me personally, we have the benefit of not being, a Congress member right now. We don't have to say, but it's already the law. Why would you pass the law that's already the law? And because you could just picture it. Then let's make it more strong. Let's make it more robust, especially when half the country thinks it's one of the biggest problems facing us existentially. So it's almost a public health crisis to lower the temperature in the room and say, okay, our next president is talking about deporting somewhere 6, 10, 12 million people. He says he's going to start with the criminals. So let's define that set. Lakin, it was a tragedy to be murdered by a Venezuelan person here who took advantage of the opportunity to come to this country. But that's one person, right? So it's really letting the tail wag the dog.
Symbol they use. It's symbolic outrage. The name of this pretty young woman, that's why they named the bill that. That's part of what's putting the Democrats on the defensive.
Yeah, again, it's the universe we live in where, in the face, when leadership is demanded and required of our time, we get a bipolar tug of war, trench warfare, without transformative leadership. And this is another one of those examples. I don't blame Democrats who went along, but like you said, they need to fight for things like the DACA families, for example. And I forgot the exact number of DACA families. I haven't looked at it in a while, but those are people who were saying you have a special circumstance. You came here as a child through. You had no control over it. You've graduated from schools here. You've got a job here. You've set down your roots. You've paid taxes. Like, this is one lane that is currently protected. But if, your kid or something goes – not your kid, but, if you're caught in a situation where you got some small theft or shoplifting charge, that's not the same thing as a life of living here. It's taking away privileges that we, I think our better angels, we would want to extend to our neighbors and our family members. It's the dignified way to have a social order where we all are members of the social contract, not some loose threads where we're saying, hey, you're in this group and you slip up once and you're bounced.
I mean, is this a harbinger for draconian bills in the future, and will Democrats stand up to any of them? It looks like they're going to try to not do it all in one bill, but go issue by issue piecemeal, because otherwise they would be reprising the bill that they had before. Are they going to pass to build? Are Democrats going to fold on the issue of building the wall? Are they going to fold on health care for immigrants, right? Sending people to Mexico against the law, if it's not their country of origin. The president of Mexico has said she's willing to take those people as long as there's money to pay for housing them. But is that anyway? It's just otherwise they have no right to drop them in. It's a sovereign nation. You can't just drop people in unless there are citizens. Are the Democrats going to put up any kind of fight on this to keep the more draconian measures from coming through? And, are they going to back bills, that federal bills that purport to ban sanctuary laws?
I suspect that this bill has a backdoor clause in it that will resonate for a long time. Your question to me was, will the Democrats stand on principles to combat some of the most extreme things that we would imagine are coming down the pipeline? And I think that both factually and from perception perspective, I think they will fight against things that they perceive as draconian. And I think from their perspective, they can justify saying, well, this is just this one thing, and we'll really circle the wagons down the road. This bill allows states to sue the federal government to overturn policies, and basically it allows the political process at the state level to get legal standing to fight individual choices and policies from the federal government. And in fact, one piece of language that was removed from this most latest version of the bill was a clause in there that blamed President Biden and his White House and his executive branch for an invasion and an immigration crisis without precedent, and basically a state of emergency type verbiage, and explicitly saying the reason the states have to have the power to sue the federal government is because look at what Biden and the White House and the Democrats did. So they took that piece out of the bill, and then that got some more Democrat support. But it left in place that the states now have the authority to get involved in specific immigration issues that arise, like the one you mentioned. Like, hey.
One could backfire on them. I mean, who's president for the next 4 years?
It's a big one. Yes.
Yeah. I'll have to check the wording out, but. Will it allow for civil rights actions on behalf of states if they believe that immigrants are being mistreated? I don't know. I have to go look at the wording to see if they've specifically excluded that or other aspects of policy just to tie it up. They may regret having done that in the long run. We'll see. And the next time there's a Democratic majority, that probably will get overturned. I think that was a strategic error on their part. But again, I don't know how it's worded. It also raises some constitutional questions. I mean, can Congress pass a bill in which they give up on the supremacy clause? That's going to be an interesting question.
To
answer.
So I'm going to mention one last thing here that I think, and this isn't about my own original idea. I saw it in an editorial in the New York Times, that Democrats have historically supported some GOP legislation that came back to that they regret. So, for example, the 2002 resolution authorizing military force against Iraq. That, you know, only one person voted against it in the House, Barbara Lee.
The Patriot Act
opened up 20 years, $2 trillion worth of expenses in Afghanistan alone, marked by massive corruption and an undermining of U.S. credibility and international engagements that we're going to, it's going to be stigmatized like Vietnam was. So Democrats were all about it. 1996 Defense of Marriage Act was also listed, which basically, you know, banned the government from recognizing same-sex marriages. That was a political politically expedient compromise, saying, well, we believe people should have the right to be partners, but marriage has this special power as a word in our culture. So Democrats are going to go along and protect this magic power of this word. And regrettably so. I mean, in hindsight, it was reactionary and ignorant. So this could be similar, like an immigration, the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Act that the Democrats proposed in the past. That was a Republican wish list. If that actually got passed, that might be another example like this. So, you know, this bill hasn't passed yet. We don't know what the final version is. You and I are going to check out the verbiage. But as of right now, it looks like a disgrace.
Just real quickly, because I'm getting emails and even a phone call from people, rumors about ICE coming in and arresting people at Winco are false. There were apparently some arrests, but it was not ICE and had nothing to do with immigration policy. However, ICE is stepping up on its raids in anticipation of Trump coming in. There's, in Kern County, there are a bunch of raids. There are also false rumors of ICE taking advantage of the fires in Los Angeles to get people, and that was not true. So we'll be talking a lot about immigration in future shows. This brings us to predictions. Dave, what do you have for us?
Well, this week, because I'm in Florida, I have my ear to the tracks a little bit on Florida issues. I'm going to tie together that immigration policy issue that we just talked about. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis made his way into the political limelight ahead of the Trump inauguration and ahead of the Trump administration's actions on immigration by calling for a special session of the Florida legislature. And there are some elements of this special session that are not immigration related, but the two key elements are that it will become a misdemeanor for law enforcement officers and elected officials, would be a felony if they do not fully cooperate in enforcement of immigration laws. And he's also called for expanding Florida's state transportation program that would ship migrants outside of the United States instead of just around the United States. So he's declaring that an emergency, basically an emergency special session. But the new incoming Speaker of the House and head of the Senate here in Florida said this is premature and irresponsible. That's a polite way of saying political opportunism. You don't need a special session. Their legislative session is going to start on March 4th. Trump hasn't even taken office yet, and they're going to do this methodically, more methodically, not let DeSantis grandstand and showboat and show how far ahead of Trump or how close to Trump he can align himself. My prediction is that this move on immigration policy by Governor DeSantis will ultimately result in a template legislative package that will be duplicated in about half the states across the country, trying to one-up each other about how in alignment they are, or if not one-up, at least get ahead of things and say, we are all about this immigration deportation program, or we're going to do whatever we can to support it. I think that this is that first shot across the bow by Governor DeSantis.
Interesting. I mean, they've already done that with abortion laws and everything, where there's a template. So, all right, I'm going to be real quick here. Based on the way the Pete Hegseth hearing went, and based on the way the other hearings have gone, you know, some of the nominees have been asked a very simple question. How do you believe that Joe Biden won the election in 2020? They can't answer that straightforward. They will say Joe Biden is the president. That's not an answer to the question. That's basically been their dodge for the last 4 years, so that they can have their cake and eat it too. But I am predicting, based on the lack of any type of spine from any Republicans with any of them, that every single nominee that Trump has done is going to pass through, some with some Democrats, but there's going to be a number of strict party votes, including Pegseth. But he's going to get everybody. He has got total control of the party, and there is no resistance within the party at this point. We'll find out if these things come true, but until next time, stay informed and stay engaged.